Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
All that tough talk from the Teamsters, and now UPS is back at the bargaining table. In the meantime, President Sean O'Brien says to the White House, stay put. We got this. Today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, July 21st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Jeffrey Stouffer will be our first guest on the show today, longtime contributor to America's Workforce, and he serves as the Media and Communications Division Director for the American Legion. Complete updates, legion.org. And this is the time we preview the next month's edition, which would be the August edition. On the cover story, Road Warriors, Roadmap to Post-Service Prosperity. And this is something that Jeff and I have had a conversation for years, and it all involves military men and women who attain certain skills in the military, and this one primarily dealing with driving a vehicle, a truck. It could be a Humvee. Who knows? Bottom line is, there's a lot of skills that you learn in the military, and when the servicemen and women come home, a lot of the credentialing does not transfer. Well, guess what? It's getting a whole lot better. And I got to thank the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. They've been driving this issue. In fact, they're mentioned in the article. This article starts off with an individual out of Reedley, California, who calls his truck his baby. He washes it every day. He is a soldier in the California Army National Guard. Been a soldier for the past five, 6 years. And he was assigned to the 114th Transportation Company. His military occupational specialty is 91 Bravo, wheeled vehicle mechanic, trained to drive what's called a four-man pack. Well, right now he's got 2 years under his belt working for Werner Enterprises, a national transportation logistics company that's been helping what's called the task force movement achieve its goal to strengthen the U.S. supply chain and fill important gaps in the economy. And when it comes to trucking, we need a lot of truck drivers. The shortage is anywhere between 60,000 and 100,000 openings for drivers. And that shortage is expected to continue. So that's the first part. Again, that's the cover story. The other story we're going to get into involves the American Legion and what they're doing with VA claims and appeals. Apparently, the Legion's VA appeals and claims teams in Indianapolis and Washington are on pace for a record year. There's been a backlog on this, and the Legion took it upon itself to say, we got to do something. So there's been a change in management in Washington, and it's working. It's working. And lastly, the story we're going to get into, and this is authored by Ken Olson, who's done fabulous work for the American Legion. It's titled Silent Warriors, and involves the Air Force. For decades, Air Force signals intelligence specialists have quietly monitored the world's hotspots without acknowledgement or accolades. They were forbidden from telling anyone what they were doing. They were essentially spying, but they were doing it in a technological way. And even matters that were declassified, they couldn't even talk about. And we're going to get into that as well and where they stand today. It's kind of like the Forgotten Warriors. And there are many. There are many in all the wars that we were involved in. Rich Fiesta will be joining us as our second guest on the show, and he serves as Executive Director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. And the bulk of the discussion today is what the Biden administration is doing to address the nursing home staffing crisis. And they've done this by introducing a rule, proposed rule, that includes requiring more care workers per resident. A no-brainer, right? Rich reports low staffing often means that workers are forced to manage care for dozens of patients at a time, often leading to a higher incidence of falls, missed care, higher mortality rates. So Rich will be our second guest on the show. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Lots of news coming from the Teamsters today as thousands of UPS Teamsters practice pickets, rallies, mobilizations around the country. Guess what? UPS, United Parcel Service, has bowed to the overwhelming show of Teamster unity. And yesterday they said, okay, let's start talking. Let's resume the negotiations. The Teamsters National Negotiating Committee and the company will set dates probably today or over the weekend to resume those talks, which are expected to happen next week. The Teamsters agreement with UPS is the largest private sector union contract in North America. The Teamsters are demanding the strongest possible contract, or they are ready to strike at the end of the month. Over 340,000 UPS Teamster delivery and warehouse logistics workers nationwide are fighting for a new five-year agreement that guarantees better pay for all workers, eliminates the two-tier wage classification, and increases the number of full-time jobs, along with addressing safety and health concerns around heat illness, and provide stronger protections against managerial harassment. I like that. Managerial harassment. By the way, we're talking about a very profitable company. Last year alone, I hope you're sitting down for this. Last year alone, UPS made more than $100 billion. Not million. $100 billion. In the meantime, Teamster President Sean O'Brien has warned the White House to stay out of anything that might lead up to a strike. This is what Sean's a different kind of union guy. He's talking tough here. Now, like other presidents, Biden can jawbone both sides to a settlement, but they can't force anything, which is unlike the situation at railroads and airlines where an administration and Congress can actually force a contract on the workers because they are subject to the Railway Labor Act, not regular labor law. We addressed this a lot last fall when there was a possible strike in the rail industry. And that's what they did to the 115,000 freight rail workers who were set to strike last November. Well, the White House is staying out of the Teamster UPS dispute. That's according to Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. This is what she said. We want to ensure that we're playing a constructive and productive role, right? Well, that's how we kind of move forward here. The Teamsters have asked us not to get involved, not to intervene, and hopefully the two sides can reach a mutual agreement and come to the table and do that collective bargaining that I'm talking about. We'll continue to be in touch with both parties constructively, supporting the efforts to reach a solution. But again, we are confident that both sides are going to come to an agreement. That's according to the White House press secretary. Now, there's some history here. Presidents can also use the bully pulpit to influence public opinion for or against workers. I want to go back to the Truman administration. Harry Truman did so against the mine workers. This was back in 1946. He was telling Congress at the time he would send troops to man the mines when he was literally handed a note saying that forced strike had been settled. Again, Harry Truman back in 1946. One more here, and this involves Google. Google is required to negotiate with YouTube contract staff, according to an NLRB ruling on Wednesday. concluding that Google jointly employs a group of Texas YouTube workers. The board ruled that YouTube and Google share the duty to bargain with Alphabet, the Alphabet Workers Union, which was unanimous in their vote to represent the workers. Google can challenge the NLRB's joint employer finding in federal courts, but it first must intentionally refuse to bargain to trigger a separate unfair labor practice case. By the way, that Alphabet Workers Union, they're affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. All right, quick break. When we come back, Jeff Stouffer on behalf of the American Legion.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That'd be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our longtime regulars. That would be Jeffrey Stouffer. Jeffrey is the Media and Communications Division Director for the American Legion, for their magazine and the website, too, legion.org, for complete updates. And he's here to talk about the August edition. Boy, this summer is flying by. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Flash. It's great to be with you, as always. Yeah, we have a good issue this month, especially, I think, for your listenership.
They're all good issues. I mean, really good issues. And I'd spread the word as much as I can about the Legion and what I like about the Legion, which is a perfect fit for this show. You're trying to connect people from the military into jobs, good jobs, I might add. And the cover story this month, well, actually for August, is Road Warriors, Roadmap to Post-Service Prosperity. And it's all about getting service members, veterans, into the trucking industry, and for very good reason. They need them. They need them. There is a huge demand for truck drivers. Talk to me about this one. Jeff, go ahead.
This has been a big priority for the American Legion throughout the last year and a half anyway. I think it was in April of 2022 when Task Force Movement was kind of created by the White House and has just got this multi-stakeholder steering committee, and the American Legion is on it, of people in labor, industry, government, academia, to literally, you know, what we learned from COVID was that we have a problem when suddenly something goes wrong in the supply chain, the economy goes downhill fast. And we know the problem right now is just the lack of people to work in some of these important industries like trucking. And for many years, the American Legion has been advocating, lobbying, working to see about getting military veterans credentials, accelerate their credentials so that they transfer from their training and their service time into their, you know, certifications and their driver's license, there's in this case, commercial driver's license, work and get certified to drive, commercial trucks, other industries, hazardous materials handling, which are often related, just a variety of different industries. And what's interesting is a lot of the people in the military don't necessarily understand the transferability of the skills that they're learning in the military while they're in, but then they come out and then they enter into, a certification credentialing program. And they say, well, I already did all this in the military, and I know how to, handle hazardous materials. I know how to handle myself and, how to deal with a big, heavy truck and do this kind of work. So with the shortage being what it is, I mean, it's generally considered about 80,000 truck drivers short in America right now in the economy. And this has been the target for task force movement, is to try to close that gap specifically by fast tracking veterans into those industries. And some big companies like Werner Enterprises is one that was that we profile a little bit in the story with their Operation Freedom, who are really working to get skills test waivers and getting these young veterans into these industries without having to necessarily hit all the same, credentialing criteria. So that's the big story that we're working this. This month is going to be all about truck driving. Next month we will be hitting about a similar story in the commercial truck driving sector, and that's where a lot of these Afghan refugees who are allies in Afghanistan who've come to the United States are using some of this fast tracking and some of these accelerated programs in Philadelphia to mm-hmm. get their CDLs. It's working because the need is there, and
right.
And second of all, it's a war for talent. I mean, people are all there are a lot. Every industry, it seems like, is hungry for hard workers in these skilled, professions.
There's a lot of job openings, as you indicated, and the pay is very, very good, especially when it comes to overtime. The story that you're referencing is about an individual out of Reedley, California. His name is Eric Macedo. Is that how you pronounce his name? Eric Macedo?
Macedo? Yeah.
Yeah, he calls his truck his baby, and he washes it every day. Now, there's a military guy for you.
Oh, he is. And he's so proud to be in this industry. And, this is another thing that about the veteran job candidate and the veteran employee is he sees his job as something much more than just a job for pay. It is a purpose. And he brings this up in the story, and he says he feels like he is fulfilling a need in rural California, delivering, perishable groceries on his route, which is like a 200-mile route, delivering these to what we are learning are food deserts, right? Food insecurity mm-hmm. is a kind of a growing problem in America.
Oh, yeah.
And he feels like that this is, and he's right, that his job is not just to drive a truck for a paycheck. His job is to fulfill a mission to get food to communities that need it.
Yeah. People don't realize that. They don't realize the connection and how they have food on the table, whether it's at home or at a restaurant. And there's people like Eric that are delivering that food each and every day. And there's a certain sense of pride in that. We should also point out, and I saw that the Teamsters pop up in the story. They're one of our sponsors here on the show. This was out of Fort Riley, Kansas. The Teamsters Military Assistance Program is involved in getting more truck drivers together. It's called TMAP. And apparently they might be aligned here with ABF Freight. Can you talk about that? Because I know the Teamsters brought this up years ago. They wanted to make sure, and you talked about those credentials. They want to make sure that what you learn in the military transfers over to the private sector. So they're a big part of this still today, right?
They sure are. We went to one of our writers, Laura Edwards, went to Fort Riley and kind of watched how they train and how they operate. And Fort Riley has, you know, huge, huge installation, and they have the room and they have the ability. And this is a growing priority among the high brass in the military, is to prepare their transitioning service members for civilian careers. I've talked to many, high-level officers across the country, and, you know, this wasn't always the case. There was kind of this sense that, well, if we train them for civilian careers, we're not going to keep them in the military. Well, then they started doing the riffing, the early discharges ahead of retirement, and they realized that this is probably not the right message to be sending to new recruits. So they basically are the military, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, they're built baking in to the final 6 months of anybody's military service time the opportunity to enter into these training programs. And the Teamsters Military Assistance Program is at work with ABF Freight at Fort Riley, training these soldiers to learn the trade, so that when they walk out, they're plug and play, or almost plug and play, ready to enter into the. So they're on their way to getting their CDLs, if not got them, by the time that they discharge. They don't have there is none of this. What am I going to do now after you get your separation? And that's so important to them.
There's a website from the Teamsters here in the article. It's Teamster. It's not Teamsters. Teamster.org/TMAP. Teamster.org/TMAP. And that stands for the Teamsters Military Assistance Program, connecting transitioning active duty service members, vets, military spouses with job opportunities from, and this is a key word, responsible employers. Okay, we definitely want we want responsible employers, not fly by night. No, we want companies that pay their workers, checks don't bounce, they have good benefits, and obviously right now there's a lot of pressure on the trucking industry to do that, to be responsible, because they need workers. They need workers. But there's a few out there that we don't want to deal with. But again, the article is titled Roadmap to Post-Service Prosperity, Road Warriors, cover story of the upcoming August edition of the American Legion magazine. Let's take a break right now. When we come back, there's more to talk about with Jeff. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. And if you missed our segment with Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, they're doing a great job organizing, especially libraries. You can check out that show. It was Tuesday's show at awfpodcast.com. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Jeff Stoffer on behalf of the American Legion magazine, legion.org, talking about the August edition of the Legionnaires magazine. And I am very happy to report, Jeff, you and I talked about this for years, about the claims and appeals process at the VA and how far behind they got. Apparently, the whole issue has turned around a bit here, and it's moving in the right direction. What's going on here, Jeff?
Well, it is. We're frankly the number we know that, you know, over a half million new disability claims have been filed since the PACT Act was passed last August, and we're coming up on some of the first of the deadlines at the end of September and in the fall and in the months ahead for people to apply for those benefits. Those are the benefits that opened eligibility for VA healthcare and disability benefits for people who have suffered with conditions related to burn pits and a certain segment of Agent Orange veterans and a big segment of veterans who are exposed to atomic radiation and a few others. But what we're seeing is what I would call it a hockey stick effect. In just the last couple of years, American Legion service officers who are accredited and have to be for federal, you know, reasons. We're a federally chartered organization, so our service officers have a training program, and they have to be very carefully certified in order to get power of attorney and to work on behalf of a veteran seeking disability benefits. Well, it's pretty jaw-dropping when you think that in 2020 they were able to secure $14.5 billion in disability benefits for veterans who've been, you know, who had service-connected disabilities supporting them. Then comes the next year was 2021, and that went up to $14.8 billion. That's good. Then in 2022, it jumps to $16.3 billion. This is billion with a B in cases all across the country. And our service officers, American Legion service officers, are working on about 750,000 up to a million claims at all times. It's just a continuous, you know, flow of disability claims that they're working on. They contact a service officer will work with the veteran or the family member to see not only their disability claims, but what other federal and state benefits or care opportunities are available to them. It's kind of like they serve as the liaison between the veteran and the federally provided benefits that are, you know, passed by Congress and signed by the president. But, you know, there's a gap between the veteran who deserves those benefits and earned them and has a condition that would qualify and the actual receiving of the benefits. And that's where the American Legion and other veterans or other, there's only like seven other veteran service organizations that have federally chartered and accredited service officers. And those groups, the American Legion being the biggest of them, does this work to connect the veteran to the benefits and healthcare that they need. And the PACT Act is kind of, we're watching it very closely right now because we don't have our 2023 numbers. We will have those at the end of this fiscal year. So coming up in a couple of months, we will have updated numbers. And I wouldn't be surprised if that $16.3 billion doesn't crank up to about getting closer to about $20 billion. And the caseload, the number of cases is going to continue to climb.
So, Jeff, let me ask you here. I know there was a backlog on this, getting those claims processed. What happened here? Did they add more staff? It sounds like they added more money, which created more staff, but better organization, combination thereof? What's your take on that?
Well, they couple things happened. There was a new law that was signed that gave that sort of eased the burden of proof, and it took a few steps out of the process if you were appealing a claim, if you were appealing a decision. Suppose, you know, it's a big difference between having a 20% service-connected disability rating and a 50% service-connected disability rating, and those percentages are based on a number of criteria. But a service officer, accredited service officers, can find those, make sure that all of your criteria are documented. It's not necessarily that they think that, oh, well, you're faking it. They think it's the problem is, do we have adequate documentation? Service officers help with that documentation. What that means is they file a claim. They might go through the process at a regional VA benefits office, mm-hmm. and that case may be denied at that level on the basis of incomplete information, service officer or the American Legion Veterans Appeals staff, which we have staff in Washington, D.C. and in Indianapolis who work tirelessly to handle these appeals. And just, you know, they're on their way. Let's see, they've handled our Washington and Indianapolis offices have handled 52,174 cases, and they've helped veterans get, you know, $220 million in retroactive disability benefits over the past 5 years. This means a lot to someone who is disabled and who served their country, and the reason for their disability is related to their service, and they're having a tough time, you know, surviving and making ends meet. And we work on their behalf. The American Legion does. And what we're going to see when 2023 concludes, I think we're going to see record-breaking numbers of cases handled, record-breaking numbers of appeals managed successfully by our service officers and our appeals representatives, and probably record dollars in disability compensation that was, frankly, wrongly denied the first time around. And the changes include, there was a big change in the leadership in the Veterans Benefits Administration about 3 years ago, and they really dug in and did new technological processes, and they have what I remember vividly when I was first starting working on VA coverage and veterans health care and benefits, walking into one of those big regional offices where they were going over claims, and there were stacks of file folders and boxes and papers from floor to ceiling everywhere, and these poor bedraggled benefits people were digging through these boxes trying to find the evidence that the condition that the veteran was suffering from was in fact service connected, which they have to find. The process has gotten improved through technology. There's a lot of room for improvement yet, but I think the room for it's certainly more doable when you have a pretty clean, much cleaner slate. And that's what we're working with now in the Veterans Benefits Administration. And they have made great progress. So, but our people are there to assist.
Good, good. One more question here on this before we go to the next story. I remember talking to you about, I believe it was the Blue Water Vets, and these were the folks that were stationed off of Vietnam, and they were denied the benefits from Agent Orange because they weren't on land. Now, there's a good example of the criteria. Did they, to your knowledge, ever fix that? Are they part of this group getting service?
Yeah, and the PACT Act also adds in a number of other Agent Orange connected veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange while in the service. And I don't have the exact criteria in front of me right now, but if you go on the VA website, and you can probably find it. But we had that all articulated in the October issue of the magazine about who all was going to now receive overdue benefits. You know, but Agent Orange, people who, and then another group that was, you know, wrongly denied benefits was these veterans who were in these, a lot of the nuclear cleanup sites at Inuitok Atoll out in the Pacific, Spain, Thule, Greenland, who were exposed to atomic radiation, got cancer, got sick way ahead of time, and was very presumably from exposure to atomic radiation. These cleanups are now eligible for treatment. You know, altogether, the PACT Act opened up the ability for 23 different presumptive conditions or illnesses, that cancers, respiratory illnesses, and that sort of thing, to become eligible for benefits and care, which, you know, for these veterans, it's a lifesaver.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, this leads into the next article in the August edition, Silent Warriors. And this is a great story because there's a lot of people that did work behind the scenes, like specialists, linguists, Morse code specialists. And we're going back to the Cold War, Vietnam. There's a lot of conflicts that they were involved in. They weren't exactly on the front lines, but they were doing work that they couldn't even talk about. I mean, imagine that. There was a certain pride in their work. They wanted to talk about it, but they couldn't because of the secrecy involved in this.
Right.
So fast forward to today. Are they being taken care of? It doesn't seem to be, but I'd like to hear your opinion on this one.
Well, in terms of their health care and benefits, I can't necessarily speak to that, but I think that it's one of those cases where they can't really say exactly what they did in public. They can't go out and be, you know, formally recognized. But these are by and large Air Force veterans who an Air Force, members of the U.S. Armed Forces who were really smart. They tested really high. Some of them were the tops in their high school classes, and they got into the U.S. Air Force, and then they were basically recruited into the U.S. Air Force Security Service. And that is what we signals intelligence. And they were literally flying around the world spying on other aircraft from Syria to Iran to a lot in Vietnam, over Laos and Cambodia. And they're funny when they're talking about this. None of them wanted to learn Vietnamese or Russian or any of these languages that they were required to learn. They said, well, you can then be a military, you can go into the military police, or you can go clean up the barracks or something like that. So they all decided, well, maybe we will learn this language. And so they learned Russian. They would learn Russian, fly around, uh-huh, and they would intercept the Russian air traffic communications, and they could tell, you know, in advance when there was going to be a nuclear test. They could tell in advance when some warring nations might be having a dogfight in the air, creating some kind of a disturbance. And they also, you know, they were involved with they intercepted radio communications out of the PLO. Remember the PLO, the Palestine Liberation, mm-hmm, Organization, terrorists, their first commercial aircraft hijackings. I mean, they were intercepting the signals, and they were involved in, you know, in the attempt to overthrow King Hussein in Jordan. And they were capturing this information, and a lot of it, they've done more than this, even more than this. And it started right after World War II. It was 1948 that it started, a year after the Air Force was formed. And this was a very unique class of airmen who were, you know, quote unquote, they had to keep quiet about it. They were literally spies. They've monitored the world's hotspots throughout literally the Cold War, all of the Cold War, including the Vietnam War, if you want to include that as part of the Cold War, and lot of air surveillance and air signals intercepting in the Vietnam War, big time. And so they have had to kind of like stay quiet about their experience because most of it was classified. And you know, and it's interesting to note that 53 of their class, of their members of that Air Force group, are missing or were killed, and their deaths have largely gone unnoticed on the memorial walls and things like that because they didn't really supposedly exist. You know, this was a time when Cold War was the Cold War, and it was all about what you could learn from the enemy, from generally the Russians or the Chinese or the Vietnamese or whatever, and in the Middle East. And it was a group of veterans who we, Ken Olson, our writer, you've read a lot from Ken in our magazine, he's a good writer, and he's got this group together and was able to interview several of them and talked about their daily lives. Was about, they described it as 95% boredom and 5% pure panic because they would basically, you know, they would be flying around waiting for anything to happen, and then only 5% of the time would something happen. When they did, he said, I never saw anybody choke. They were calm under pressure, handled the situations when they, you know, there was reconnaissance signals. And this is an area of military service that doesn't necessarily make it into the movies so much because it's not like, you know, not a lot of, you know, classic warfare and that sort of thing. But these guys saved a lot of lives, and they saved a lot of lives, especially in the Vietnam War. Yeah.
Just amazing. Forbidden from telling anyone, including family, about their work. And some of them are not saying anything today, even though the matters were declassified. I mean, that's how well they were trained on this situation. Got to check that out. All included in the August edition of the American Legion magazine. For complete updates, legion.org. Jeffrey, you take care. Thank you for all the good stuff that you're doing over there. We'll talk to you next month. Okay, brother?
Thanks a lot. I look forward to it. Thank you.
You got it. All right, we're going to do a quick break here. When we come back, Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good employment, with good wages and great benefits. You can find more at ulagency.org. All right, let's go to Washington and join one of our longtime regulars. That would be Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Rich serves as executive director. National website, retiredamericans.org. And you can follow the organization on Twitter, @ActiveRetirees, @ActiveRetirees. Today, we got a couple things to talk about. We're going to start off with the nursing home staffing crisis. We did a show on this about a week ago with the Service Employees International Union and what they did in the state of Pennsylvania. And they didn't make some progress on that, but we have to do a whole lot better job across the country. Rich, welcome back to the show. I guess the Biden administration has a game plan on this. Why don't you fill us in? What's going on right now?
Yeah, as you know, as we know around the country, nursing home staffing is a critical issue as our population ages. You know, 10,000 people turn 65 every day, and over one out of three Americans at some point in their life will need some sort of long-term care or rehab-type facility for them. So it's a growing issue that more Americans will need this kind of care. Conditions in nursing homes, have we seen, only exacerbated by the COVID pandemic, show that oftentimes they are understaffed for the number of patients. Pay and benefits and working conditions are often what we would call substandard. Extremely high turnover within the workforce. So the Biden administration has been going on to work, been having hearings, and is ready to release a rule for public comment on staffing ratios for nursing homes. And right now, we understand it's in the Office of Management and Budget and for regulatory review, but we're hoping, Flash, that sometime in the coming weeks, it'll be released. The public can comment, and then we can get a final standard that will go nationwide.
Now, Rich, explain how this will work, because it's my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that like nursing homes are regulated by states, but the federal government can set a standard on that. Do they have to live up to what the federal government is demanding? What's the process in that? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, licensing for the most part is through the states, but there's also Medicaid money in nursing homes as well, that the most common person who is a nursing home resident is an older woman, lower income on Medicaid, for example. So, and Medicaid is a joint state-federal program that the Medicaid program has national standards, minimum standards in a number of areas on what qualifies as a Medicaid benefit, for example, and then states are free to add their own. So that would be the regulatory hook for a national standard on nursing home staffing, for example.
Do we have any idea at this stage about these ratios? We talked about this briefly last week, as I indicated in the beginning here, in Pennsylvania, and they worked hard on that. They have a lot of nursing homes in Pennsylvania. But I'm just wondering, is there, and I know the nurses do this in the hospitals. California has been very vigilant on nurse-to-patient ratios. National Nurses United has been driving that. Do we have any idea where we might go with this right now?
Well, so as you mentioned, some states have gone ahead on their own and have had regulations for standards. So many nurses per patient, at least one nurse, for example, must be on shift even through the night, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what we're hoping the final rule does. We need to point out that a number of academic studies have shown that unionized nursing homes have better patient outcomes than non-unionized nursing homes, especially during the COVID pandemic at its peak as well. And if you have a union in a nursing home, you're going to have negotiated hours, you're going to have negotiated pay, and other workplace standards that will give, in the long run, what we're all for is better patient outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. Not surprised about that in union nursing homes. And to your point, the pandemic kind of put this on the front burner, didn't it?
It did indeed, not only for the number of elderly who, of course, were subject to the worst effects of COVID, but also to the workforce, because you know, anybody can get COVID. So there was both the pandemic plus a workforce shortage at many facilities around the country as well.
All right. Well, keep us posted on that. Hopefully that ruling will be coming out sooner than later. Let's turn the page a little bit and talk about prescription drug reforms. I know this administration, the Biden administration, is trying to lower the cost, and they've moved forward on that, especially with the Inflation Reduction Act. But then here comes Big Pharma, and I guess there's a number of how many lawsuits have been filed now to stop this right now, Rich?
I think we're up to five, four by individual drug companies like Merck and Johnson & Johnson, and one by Pharma, the big lobbying firm. I think the Chamber of Commerce has also filed one as well, U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It's kind of head-scratching because under a number of programs, the pharmaceutical industry is already negotiating drug prices in Medicaid, for example, or with the VA. So they're now in court saying that somehow what Congress passed in the Inflation Reduction Act is unconstitutional, some sort of taking. Well, taking and negotiation are two completely different things. So we'll see. They seem to be flooding the zone, so to speak, in various courts around the country filing these cases over the last month to 6 weeks.
Okay, you mentioned the VA. Now, is there any chance that that could stop? I mean, they're negotiating the drug prices in the VA, and they've been doing that for a long time. Now, is there a chance that because of these lawsuits, they can stop doing that as well?
I don't think so, just because of the VA is a public federal entity. I think their theory is that somehow this is going to private. It's a different law under the IRA, for example, and mm-hmm. therefore, as private entities, they're subject to whatever constitutional theories on takings, for example. We'll have to see as these cases move forward exactly what their claims are and how they're going to try and put them forward. But it's just bizarre that they're doing this. It certainly leaves them up to ridicule. And just the greed that the pharmaceutical industry in this country has.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They got a lot of support with the House Republicans on this as well. So we'll see what happens. Five lawsuits right now after Biden's tries to lower drug prices. Now, under the Inflation Reduction Act, isn't that the part where insulin went down to like $35? Is that right?
That's right. Starting this past January, Medicare recipients will pay no more than $35 a month for insulin.
All right, one more here. Speaking of House Republicans, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Well, she's always trying to find something else to talk about. This one here turned into a commercial for the Biden administration. Apparently, she was speaking at, I guess they call this Turning Points Action Conference. And what she essentially did was tear down the president's policies, which made him look really good. I mean, she attacked things like what FDR did. He says, well, Biden's going to expand on finishing what FDR started and LBJ expanded on. I mean, we're talking Social Security, we're talking Medicare, Medicaid, and obviously both presidents were in favor of unions. And the polling shows people like those programs. Isn't that right, Rich?
Yes, it really was a bizarre performance boomeranged on her. It seemed to have no self-awareness of what she was talking about. But nonetheless, she gave a full-throated defense of American history and the progress we've made on things from civil rights and health care and housing, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, over the last 80 years. You just want to give her a big medal and send her off to the LBJ and JFK libraries.
Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. You take care. Stay safe. Stay strong. We'll talk again next month. Okay, brother?
Great, Flash. Always great being with you.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we're going to check in with the Teamster Rail Division and Our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, will also be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.